was the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time, reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. That was the year. January 23. Night and a blinding pea soup fog enveloped the steamship Republic off Nantucket Island, Massachusetts. A skipper, Captain Sealby, peers hopelessly from his bridge through the gray blanket, while a few feet aft, radio operator Jack Binn sends his routine signals. Suddenly... the Republic is rammed amidships by the steamship Florida. A steel hull ripped wide into a deep gash, admitting seawater into the engine room. Three of the Republic's passengers and three of the Florida's seamen are killed by the impact. The bow of the Florida is crumpled back for 30 feet like so much tin. The Republic's spark, Jack Binns, remains at his post in the radio cabin, repairs his damaged equipment, utilizing a storage battery for power, continues to send distress calls until soon ships within a radius of 200 miles were speeding to the disaster. As the Republic slowly settled into the wintry waters of the Atlantic, all survivors were removed to the Florida, all save Captain Sealby, who, true to the tradition of the sea, remained with his ship to be picked up by searchlights a half hour after she sank, and rescued. The next day, citizens of the U.S. welcomed a new hero, radio operator of the Republic, Jack Binns.
1909. That was the year.
January 9 witnessed the culmination of a sequence of events which had begun almost 3 years before. Shortly after midnight, October 20, 1906, near Reelfoot Lake in the northwest corner of the state of Tennessee, eight hooded men surrounding two prisoners come to a halt in a deep wooded ravine.
All right, boys, we'll stop here.
What? What are you going to do with us, boys?
We don't know yet. Captain Quentin Rankin, you and Mr. B.Z. Taylor here own Reelfoot Lake, don't you?
Yes.
Well, you know that we uns have always made our living, and a good un, too, from fishing in that there lake.
Yes, but...
Shut up! Now you and your partner here have set up your own rules and regulations, preventing we uns from fishing in that lake. Slip that noose over his head.
You're not going to lynch me, are you, boys?
That, Captain Rankin, all depends on you. Are you going to allow us to fish in that lake without meddling, or are you ain't?
No. No. We own that lake, and it's ours to do with what we like.
All right, Captain. That was your last chance. String him up.
Lynched, his body riddled with bullets, Captain Rankin became the corpus delicti in murder charges against the eight fishermen of Reelfoot Lake. His partner, Taylor, had escaped, swimming down a creek under a hail of rifle fire. On January 9, 1909, Mountain Justice met defeat at the hands of the penal code of the state of Tennessee when six of the assailants were sentenced to be hanged, two to life imprisonment.
That was the year.
Monday, February 22, Hampton Roads, Virginia.
Admiral Sperry, officers and men of the battleship fleet, over a year has passed since you steamed out of this harbor and over the world's rim. And this morning, the hearts of all who saw thrilled with pride as the hulls of the mighty warships lifted above the horizon. This is the first battleship fleet that has ever circumnavigated the globe. Those who perform the feat again can but follow in your footsteps. We are proud of all the ships and all the men in this whole fleet, and we welcome you home to the country whose good repute among nations has been by what you have done.
Thus did President Theodore Roosevelt welcome the 12,000 officers and men of the U.S. fleet of 16 battleships on their return to home waters after a cruise of more than 2 years.
1909. That was the year.
Dover, England, July 25.
I don't see him yet, do you?
No, I don't. I say, what's all the to-do about? Some blighter jump off the cliff?
Oh, no. Quite the opposite, as a matter of fact. Some blighter's about to jump on the cliff.
Well, haven't you heard, old man? Louis Blériot, the French flyer, is crossing the channel in his aeroplane.
Oh, I say. Come now, you're pulling my leg.
No, not at all. There he is.
Louis Blériot, his white wing plane, circled over twice, battled a fog bank for 10 minutes, then landed gently on Shakespeare Cliff. For the first time, a traveler landed upon English soil without arriving by water. After the feat, Louis Blériot remarked,
I am more than happy that I crossed the channel. At first I promised my wife that I would not make the attempt. Then I determined that if one man failed, I would be the first to come. And voila, I am here.
2 days later, July 27, at Fort Myer, Virginia, 39-year-old Orville Wright, with Frank P. Palmer as a passenger, took off on an attempt to keep his plane aloft for 1 hour and win $25,000. Breaking Brother Wilbur's record, Orville Wright remained in the air 1 hour, 12 minutes, 40 seconds. Greeting him upon landing was jovial President William H. Taft.
Mr. Wright, I congratulate you on your brilliant achievement. You deserve, sir, the thanks of the nation and the world. By the way, was your passenger well behaved, or did he insist on talking to the motorman?
No, Mr. President, I assure you no one could talk over the popping of that engine.
1909, that was the year.
Beyond the imaginary line around the Earth's boreal zone, designated upon charts as 66 degrees, 30 minutes north latitude, the line which men call the Arctic Circle, there marches an endless procession of more than 700 souls. Gazing through the frigid kaleidoscope of the Aurora Borealis, they beckon to other kindred souls in whose depths burns the valorous love of adventure. Each in his day, each in his own manner, sought to engrave his name upon the eternal tablets of history as the discoverer of the North Pole. Whether any ever succeeded, the world will never know, for each in his day, each in his own manner met death until the ninth month of the year 1909.
September 1.
Reached North Pole April 21st, 1908. Discovered land far north. Returned to Copenhagen by steamer. Frederick A. Cook.
September 6.
Herbert L. Bridgman, Secretary, Peary Arctic Club. Notify geographical societies I have discovered the pole. Commander Robert E. Peary.
September 7.
Hurrah for Peary. It is now surely all American. Cook.
September 13.
Cook's story should not be taken too seriously. The two Eskimo who accompanied him say he went no distance north and not out of sight of land. Other members of the tribe corroborate their story. Peary.
September 14.
I am absolutely indifferent in regard to Peary's doubts concerning my discovery of the North Pole. I would not degrade myself so far as to answer anything Peary has said. Frederick A. Cook.
November 3.
Commander Peary, the National Geographic Society awards you this gold medal as a token of the Society's recognition of your discovery of the North Pole.
December 8.
A committee of experts from the faculty of the University of Copenhagen has decided to reject the reports of Dr. Frederick A. Cook, in which he claims to have discovered the North Pole.
Thus did Robert Edwin Peary, plowing through the ice-encrusted waters of the Arctic Ocean in his ship, the Roosevelt, received the approbation of the world as the discoverer of the Earth's northern axis.
1909. That was the year
that Seattle, Washington, entertained the nation at its Alaska-Yukon Pacific Exposition. It was the year of the hobble skirt, the year the first Lincoln penny was issued by the U.S. Mint. It was the year you were singing,
"Dreaming of you, that's all I do. Night and day for you, I'm dying. And in your eyes, blue as the sky, I can see the love light softly shining. Because you love me, there it seems, pray meet me in the land of dreams. Meet me tonight in dreamland, under the silvery moon.
Thank you.